Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, y'all, and good night. Welcome back to another episode of Southern Sleep Stories. I'll be your sleep guide for the night, Brandon. For those of you new to the show, Southern Sleep Stories will help you sleep by me reading you a very old story very slowly with some good soothing music in the background, and then when the story is over, the music will slowly fade to silence. Any ads or sponsorships that will support the show will play only after the intro and before the relaxation begins. This will help ensure there are no interruptions in your sleep. If you're a fan of true crime and would like to check out my other show, look up Music City 911 on any podcast app or YouTube. Before we get into the story, let's make sure you're ready for some good sleep. If you're listening on YouTube or a podcast app, turn off the setting for autoplay so you won't be woke by other sounds once the episode is over. Set the temperature in your house to the most comfortable for you. If you like sleeping with a fan on, turn it to your most desirable setting. Turn all your lights out. Turn your TV off. Make sure your room and surroundings are as silent as you can make them. Now crawl into bed. Make sure you're using your covers and pillow in the most comfy way possible. Now to start, rid yourself of all your thoughts from the day. Anything bad or good that you have had happen during the day, let those fade away, and instead, concentrate only on these relaxation instructions. If you still have thoughts in your head, repeat slowly over and over for 10 seconds. Don't think. Don't think. Don't think. Now close your eyes. Take a breath in and slowly exhale. Let those previous thoughts leave your body as you exhale. Imagine yourself in the most calming and serene environment possible. Calm your body. Relax every part. I want you to start shutting down each part of your body from top to bottom. The top of your head and your forehead. Relax those muscles. Let yourself feel them change from tense to relaxed. Relax your eyes. Do the same with your cheeks. Feel them fall as the tension leaves them. Now relax your jaw. Let your teeth slightly separate as you do this. Now let your shoulders drop as low as possible. And while doing that, let your arms, hands, and fingers all relax and loosen. take another breath and think about your chest calming as you exhale slowly. Now relax your stomach, your legs, your knees, and your feet, all the way down to your toes. Now that you're fully ready for sleep, let's listen to Tajima by Miss Mitford. Once upon a time, a certain Ronin, Tajima Shum by name, an able and well-read man, being on his travels to see the world, went up to Kyoto by the Tokaido, the road of the Eastern Sea, the famous high road leading from Kyoto to Yedo. The name is also used to indicate the provinces through which it runs. One day, in the neighborhood of Nagoya, in the province of Owari, he fell in with a wandering priest, with whom he entered into conversation. Finding that they were bound for the same place, they agreed to travel together, beguiling their weary way by pleasant talk on divers matters, and so by degrees, as they become more intimate, they began to speak without restraint about their private affairs, and the priest, trusting thoroughly in the honor of his companion, told him the object of his journey. "For some time past," he said, "I have nourished a wish that has engrossed all my thoughts, for I am bent on setting up a molten image in honor of Buddha. With this object, I have wandered through various provinces, collecting alms, and, who knows by what weary toll, we have succeeded in amassing 200 ounces of silver, enough, I trust, to erect a handsome bronze figure. What says the proverb? He who bears a jewel in his bosom bears poison." Hardly had the Ronin heard these words of the priest than an evil heart arose within him, and he thought to himself, "Man's life, from the womb to the grave, is made up of good and of ill luck. Here I am, nearly 40 years old, a wanderer, without a calling, or even a hope of advancement in the world. To be sure, it seems a shame. Yet, if I can steal the money the priest is boasting about, I could live at ease for the rest of my days." And so he began casting about how best he might compass his purpose. But the priest, far from guessing the drift of his comrade's thoughts, journeyed cheerfully on till they reached the town of Kuana. Here there is an arm of the sea, which is crossed in ferry boats that start as soon as some 20 or 30 passengers are gathered together. And in one of these boats, the two travelers embarked. About halfway across, the priest was taken with a sudden necessity to go to the side of the boat, and the Ronin, following him, tripped him up while no one was looking and flung him into the sea. When the boatmen and passengers heard the splash and saw the priest struggling in the water, they were afraid and made every effort to save him. But the wind was fair and the boat running swiftly under the bellying sails, so they were soon a few hundred yards off from the drowning man, who sank before the boat could be turned to rescue him. When he saw this, the Ronin feigned the utmost grief and dismay, and said to his fellow passengers, "This priest, whom we have just lost, was my cousin. He was going to Kyoto to visit the shrine of his patron, and as I happened to have business there as well, we settled to travel together. Now, alas, by this misfortune, my cousin is dead, and I am left alone." He spoke so feelingly and wept so freely that the passengers believed his story and pitied and tried to comfort him. Then the Ronin said to the boatman, "We ought, by rights, to report this matter to the authorities, but as I am pressed for time, and the business might bring trouble on yourselves as well. Perhaps we better hush it up for the present. I will at once go on to Kyoto and tell my cousin's patron, besides writing home about it. What think you, gentlemen? Added he, turning to the other travelers. They, of course, were only too glad to avoid any hindrance to their onward journey, and all with one voice agreed to what the Ronin had proposed, and so the matter was settled. When, at length, they reached the shore, they left the boat, and every man went his way. But the Ronin, overjoyed by his heart, took the wandering priest's luggage, and, putting it with his own, pursued his journey to Kyoto. On reaching the capital, the Ronin changed his name from Shun to Tokubei, and giving up his position as a samurai, turned merchant and traded with the dead man's money. Fortune favoring his speculations, he began to amass great wealth and lived at his ease, denying himself nothing, and in course of time, he married a wife who bore him a child. Thus the days and months wore on, till one fine summer's night, some 3 years after the priest's death, Tokubei stepped out on the veranda of his house to enjoy the cool air and the beauty of the moonlight. Feeling dull and lonely, he began musing over all kinds of things, when, on a sudden, the deed of murder and theft done so long ago vividly recurred to his memory, and he thought to himself, "Here I am, grown rich and fat on the money I wantonly stole. Since then, all has gone well for me. Yet, had I not been poor, I had never turned assassin nor thief. Woe betide me. What a pity it was." And as he was resolving the matter in his mind, a feeling of remorse came over him, in spite of all he could do. While his conscience thus smote him, he suddenly, to his utter amazement, beheld the faint outline of a man standing near a fir tree in the garden. On looking more attentively, he perceived that man's whole body was thin and worn, and the eyes sunken and dim. And in that poor ghost that was before him, he recognized the very priest whom he had thrown into the sea at Kuwana. Chilled with horror, he looked again and saw that the priest was smiling in scorn. He would have fled into the house, but the ghost stretched forth its withered arm and, clutching the back of its neck, scowled at him with a vindictive glare and a hideous ghastliness of mien so unspeakably awful that any ordinary man would have swooned with fear. But Tokubei, tradesman though he was, had once been a soldier and was not easily matched for daring. So he shook off the ghost and, leaping into the room for his dirk, laid about him boldly enough. But strike as he would, the spirit, fading into the air, eluded his blows, and suddenly reappeared, only to vanish again. And from that time forth, Tokubei knew no rest, and was haunted night and day. At length, undone by ceaseless vexation, Tokubei fell ill, and kept muttering, "Oh, misery, misery, the wandering priest is coming to torture me." Hearing his moans and the disturbance he made, the people in the house fancied he was mad and called in a physician, who prescribed for him. But neither pill nor potion could cure Tokubei, whose strange frenzy soon became the talk of the whole neighborhood. Now it chanced that the story reached the ears of a certain wandering priest who lodged in the next street. When he heard the particulars, this priest gravely shook his head as though he knew all about it, and sent a friend to Tokubei's house to say that a wandering priest, dwelling hard by, had heard of his illness and, were it never so grievous, would undertake to heal it by means of his prayers. And Tokubei's wife, driven half wild by her husband's sickness, lost not a moment in sending for the priest and taking him into the sick man's room. But no sooner did Tokube see the priest than he yelled out, "Help! Help! Here is the wandering priest come to torment me again. Forgive! Forgive!" And hiding his head under the coverlet, he lay quivering all over. Then the priest turned all present out of the room, put his mouth to the affrighted man's ear, and whispered, "3 years ago, at the Kiwana Ferry, you flung me in the water, and well, you remember it." But Tokube was speechless and could only quake with fear. "Happily," continued the priest, "I learned to swim and dive as a boy. So I reached the shore and, after wandering through many provinces, succeeding in setting up a bronze figure to Buddha, thus fulfilling the wish of my heart. On my journey homeward, I took a lodging in the next street, and there heard of your marvelous ailment. Thinking I could divine its cause, I came to see you, and I'm glad to find I was not mistaken. You have done a hateful deed, but I am not a priest, and I am not forsaken the things of this world, and would it not ill become me to bear malice? Repent, therefore, and abandon your evil ways. To see you do so, I should esteem the height of happiness. Be of good cheer now, and look me in the face, and you will see that I'm really a living man, and no vengeful goblin come to torment you." Seeing he had no ghost to deal with, and overwhelmed by the priest's kindness, Tokube burst into tears and answered, "Indeed, indeed, I don't know what to say. In a fit of madness, I was tempted to kill and rob you. Fortune befriended me after, but the richer I grew, the more keenly I felt how wicked I had been, and the more I foresaw that my victim's vengeance would someday overtake me. Haunted by this thought, I lost my nerve, till one night I beheld your spirit, and from that time I fell ill. But how you managed to escape and are still alive is more than I can understand." "A guilty man," said the priest, with a smile, "shudders at the rustling of the wind or the chattering of a stork's beat. A murderer's conscience preys upon his mind till he sees what is not. Poverty drives a man to crimes which he repents of in his wealth. How true is this doctrine of Moshi, that the heart of man, pure by nature, is corrupted by circumstances." Thus he held forth, and Tokube, who had long since repented of his crime, implored forgiveness and gave him a large sum of money, saying, "Half of this amount I stole from you 3 years ago. The other half, I entreat you to accept as interest or as a gift." The priest at first refused the money, but Tokube insisted on his accepting it and did all he could to detain him, but in vain, for the priest went on his way and bestowed the money on the poor and needy. As for Tokube himself, he shook off his disorder and thenceforth lived at peace with all men, revered both at home and abroad, and ever intent on good and charitable deeds.